Tell me how you came to settle on the subject of Marian Anderson and what attracted you to the subject.
Well, I've been interested in writing about various aspects of the civil rights movement. And while I was working on my biography of Eleanor Roosevelt, I learned a great deal about the Lincoln Memorial concert with Marian Anderson, and I became interested in how that came about and the role that she played in the civil rights movement. So one thing led to another. My Eleanor Roosevelt book suggested writing another biography about Marian Anderson.
I see. Had you heard the voice very much, or had you ever seen her in concert?
I had heard the voice on recordings. I had never seen her. And I was aware of her remarkable voice and her really amazing reputation.
Well, you know, one of the things that I found, and I would be curious to ask you about this in terms of what you discovered as you began to write about her, I think what shocked me the first time that I really began to listen to her was it's a strange effect the voice has, particularly in the singing of the spirituals. There's some dimension of communicability that's very almost eerie. And I was wondering if you if this affected you that way out of curiosity.
Oh, absolutely. And many people have commented on that. I think it was Jesse Norman who said if the planet Earth could sing, I think it would sound something like Marian Anderson.
Oh, that's amazing.
And many, many people have commented on the remarkable quality of her voice. I wish I could say the same for mine right now, but it's...
Oh, you sound fine. Tell me a little bit about the nature of the kind of book you decided you wanted to write, and also... taking this message to a younger generation, as this is a book for younger children?
Well, it's a book for, say, anyone who can read at this level, which means fourth grade and up to senility.
Right.
If it isn't a good book for the grandparents, it isn't a good book for the kids.
Gotcha.
So I'm trying to write across a wide range. I wanted to express as much as I could about the type of person she was, the obstacles, primarily racial obstacles, that she had to overcome to be a success. I wanted to put it in the context of the period when she was coming of age and developing her career, the 1920s, you know, the Jim Crow period, when racial discrimination laws were pretty universal throughout many parts of the country, and how this affected her and how she overcame these barriers. And the whole focus of the book, I was leading up to the Lincoln Memorial Concert in 1939, because it's a very dramatic and unforgettable event, and it's a benchmark, a landmark in the struggle for equal rights. So she, not intentionally, but because of circumstances, became a major figure in the equal rights, civil rights movement.
Well, you're actually...
She was not a person who enjoyed confrontations or controversies. Personally, she was actually somewhat shy and retiring, so... She was thrown into this controversy with the DAR, which had refused to allow her to sing in Constitution Hall because they had a policy at the time no black artists could perform in the hall. And there was no other place to perform in Washington at the time, so through a group of... political figures, Eleanor Roosevelt, Interior Secretary Harold Ickes and others, Walter White, the head of the NAACP, they came up with the idea to have her sing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. And she did so reluctantly, actually. She said that she was scared to death, and when she stepped out on the speaking platform at the Lincoln Memorial and saw 75,000 people stretched out before her, almost as far as she could see. She said, "I sang, but I don't know how." But she did sing, and there are recordings of it, and it's hard to listen to it without a feeling of quite moved.
Well, as you say, one of the sort of comical asides in this very serious story of the Lincoln Memorial, as happens later when she's brought to the Met, she's got this extraordinary career as a recitalist, and by nature, as you say, she is an extremely dignified and a private person.
A private person, exactly.
And she sort of finds this whole thing, as she said, she'd sort of forgotten the whole thing. It had happened, and she said, well, one hall, another hall, whatever. And but the forces around her and the forces of history sort of caught up with her. It's sort of amusing the way that she struggled all this time, really, though she is helped by many, many people in her career and recognized by many people. She is essentially a person who has struggled on her own to make this career. And I think part of what gives her this psychological mindset is she's a recitalist and not an opera singer. She's used to doing things on her own, traveling on her own, and having control of events. And suddenly she finds herself in something that really, for her, is a blip on the screen. And suddenly the social forces around her grasp this, and she finds herself sort of the captive of the zeitgeist.
But the whole point of her life, I think, is that she was able to grab this opportunity and perform so well that she personally became a symbol of the civil rights struggle and helped move it forward. Her concert is a benchmark in the history of the movement.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, and what happens is...
Have you seen the film of it?
No, I've never seen the film of it. No, I haven't.
I did look at the film of it while I was working on the book. I don't remember how I obtained it, but it's quite an experience if you can find it somewhere.
Well, you know, once again, this feeling that I had when I heard her sing particularly old things like Crucifixion and Go Down Moses, this strangeness, they say that people wept. That people found themselves, once again, the captive of this extraordinary communicative power. And I think that this was probably the moment in which the politics of a moment and her art fused for this extraordinary effect and this extraordinary forum.
Well, I agree with you completely. And, you know, Toscanini, his famous remark is that she had a voice that one hears only once in 100 years. And as a contralto, the depth of her voice, I think, is which was unique, is what gives it such power and the ability to move people so profoundly.
No, I completely agree. It's I was trying to explain to someone who had seen her sing. I was talking to an older black man here in San Antonio, and he was saying that he'd heard her as a child and then met her when he was in college in the 50s when she was singing at the Hampton Institute. And once again, he said, "There are these low notes." I said, "That's the song." That you just, it's almost like seeing some majestic sea creature rise out of the water and then go, it's shattering. It's really a shattering thing.
As I said earlier, many people have commented on that in different ways, and they recognized this quality while she was still very young. I mean, she was recognized as a uniquely talented singer, vocalist, while she was in grammar school, in high school. But she had to develop the technique. She had to, her first concert in New York, Town Hall, received very negative reviews. She was devastated. She was going to give up any hope of having a singing career. And it wasn't until several years later that she returned to town hall and created a sensation. So she needed the vocal training to develop the natural gift that she already had.
Yeah, this is the thing that comes across in all the biographies that you read, that there is, as you say, this stunning. Oh. She thinks she's prepared for this town hall recital. She sings, and everyone remarks on the fact that the Brahms is not that good. She seems to be singing by rote. Everyone agrees the voice is extraordinary, but everyone questions the depth of the penetration of the text and her need for more study. And it seems that Europe, those European tours and the studies she did there, those made her. And just forging her own talent through extraordinary endurance of the endless recital giving.
And remember, she had to learn how many different foreign languages in order to sing on the recital stage. The German leaders, and to hear a black artist in the 1930s say, singing fluently in foreign languages really shattered all of the prevailing stereotypes of what African Americans were like.
I completely agree with you. I think one of the things that probably is difficult for young people today to understand, and part of the reason I think that she was so conscious of the way she projected her personality in her life, was that there were all these preconceptions about black people, and that she, in a way, in her career, was a living refutation of these mythologies.
Exactly. That is something I try to bring out in my book, putting her in the context of her time. And she was, it was not what people expected of a black vocalist. They expected maybe Negro or spirituals, and that was it. So she shattered a lot of barriers. It took a lot of courage. But she did have the confidence that came with the knowledge that she had a very rare gift, and it resided in her voice. And she was able to use it so beautifully to the fullest extent. So I think, overall, she had an enormously successful life. What, she was 90-something when she had died.
I completely agree. The one could argue about all the things, particularly the opera performances that were denied us, because by the time of the 30s, when she comes back from Europe, she's just, as they say, the phrase Marian fever. She had reached an extraordinary pitch as an artist. And it's a shame that she came to the Met so late. And I'm really sorry that one chance she had in Russia, that Stanislavski, when he approached her, I'm sorry for her sake she didn't get to do it. But as you say, one can't really feel very sorry for Marian Anderson, who had one of the great lives of the 20th century.
Oh, absolutely. And there was an interesting piece in the New York Times just a couple of days ago about re-releasing a lot of the Metropolitan Opera Saturday concerts. And he says that he feels that she's been misjudged, that she was much better in that performance than she's been given credit for.
Oh, I think that's
Tomasini,
the case.
Tomasini, yeah.
All right. I think that's the case. The reason we're having this interview, as a matter of fact, was because I told my producer that I felt that with the release, we have that performance, with the release of that disc, it would be time to sort of play her doing lead, other operas, oratorio in context, now that we have this as a CD document to celebrate and look back at her life. And as you say, it is much better than people might imagine, even given her age at that time.
Yeah, I think she was 58, something like that.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
So,
well, to close, I'm sure at some point in because of, I mean, you're a Newbery Award winner and you've done all this work with younger people, when you've talked to them about her or spoken about her, do you find that they can grasp some of these difficulties, or is it so remote that it's almost incredible to them that she went through?
They've been reading a lot about the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
About Jim Crow, about what conditions were like in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. So I think that's one area in which the educational system has been quite effective. they understand the context in which all of this happened. I think a lot of the kids have trouble relating to this music until they hear her voice. I've always wished that the book could be issued with a CD.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. Well, Mr. Friedman?
It's the only book I've done, incidentally, that has anything to do with music.
Is that right? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not really. I mean, you know, I'm just a casual concert goer once in a while. And but I wanted to write a book about the civil rights movement. And that's what I was thinking of when I began this project.
I
learned a hell of a lot about music along the way.
I see. Well, Mr. Friedman, we thank you so much for your time and for giving us this lovely book.
All right. And as they say on NPR, thanks for having me.
You bet. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right.